Okay, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. This first page got longer. If you will join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item is the consent agenda. Discussion, motion to accept.
Anything from you, Warren? Richard's thinking.
Just a minute.
That's what I figured.
I'm looking at my notes here.
My first email of the day came through, and in the subject line item, it said, "You are really dumb." So that's how my day started. So,
has it got any better since?
Well, I don't know if I'm any smarter or not the rest of the day or not. But well, thank you.
I've got one question about 4C1, Mayor. I don't know if you want to pull it off the agenda or just discuss it. It's in regards to the wording.
Yeah, let's go ahead and pull it and move it to...
B7B.
Well, there it is, 7B. Maybe I am really dumb. So we'll make budget workshop 7A, and that would be, and what number do you say that was?
4C1.
4C1, okay. So if that's everything, then just a motion to approve and move that to item 7B.
Okay, I move we remove item 4C1 from the consent agenda and approve the rest of the published consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Ada County Prosecutor's Office budget presentation. Robert, yes, if you would go to the podium, then you state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. My name is Robert Blazard. You want my address? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, if you would.
Just yeah,
work address is
in Boise, so 4493 South Cruzat Lane is my address. So I'm a deputy prosecutor for the Ada County Prosecutor's Office. I supervise the magistrate division of the office. That is the division responsible for prosecuting all the misdemeanor and infraction and in code and the code enforcement offenses that occur here in CUNA. We've been privileged to have the contract with CUNA for the last many years, and have enjoyed working with CUNA as well as the law enforcement partners here with the Ada County Sheriff's Office. For the next fiscal year, the Ada County Prosecuting Attorney's Office is requesting $54,000 for cost of prosecution, which is the same amount that we requested last year. The proposed contract, I believe, has not made its way quite yet to the council, but it will in short order. I'm going to, after my remarks, open myself up to questioning from the council and can certainly take into consideration any changes or any needs that council has that need to be reflected in the contract. Our budget request is based on cases we prosecuted in the last fiscal year. Under the contract, Ada County continues to handle each of the misdemeanor cases, from screening and charging decisions all the way through the entire pendency of the misdemeanor matter. We also handle all the infraction cases. As in many of the past years that we've prosecuted cases for the City of CUNA, these services include an entire team of prosecutors. Currently, there are approximately 10 attorneys in my division. I say approximately because we have a number of interns who help us. We also have certainly the resources of the entire office available to help us, and that includes more than 70 attorneys. That also includes legal assistants, victim witness coordinators, restitution coordinators, and our in-house investigators. The request amount that we propose here does not include infraction or misdemeanor cases that are resolved without our involvement, cases submitted to our office but that are declined, and then probation violation hearings or contempt proceedings. Although we do handle probation violation and contempt proceedings for the cases, even after they have gone through sentencing and disposition. In the last fiscal year, we prosecuted 249 total cases for the City of CUNA. I wanted to speak to one specific benefit of our services, and that is our on-call prosecutor services. We have an on-call prosecutor who is available to law enforcement partners. This is really to all of our law enforcement partners, but that includes the City of CUNA for misdemeanor offenses. And that recently, with a recent Supreme Court decision, has changed fairly significantly. There was a recent Supreme Court case, State v. Clark, where the decision from the Supreme Court essentially requires law enforcement officers to obtain arrest warrants to make any arrest on a misdemeanor case that doesn't occur in the officer's presence. The two main categories of cases that are affected are driving under the influence cases, where maybe the person drove off the road or whatever conduct, the officer didn't see that person drive. The other type of case are domestic violence cases, which typically don't occur in law enforcement presence. They're reported and the officer has to show up later. Before this decision, officers were allowed by Idaho law to make arrests on those misdemeanor cases without really any, there was an exception really to the Constitution that was carved out through statute. Well, the Supreme Court said that statute's unconstitutional and that these officers need to get warrants. And so the on-call services are what allow those officers to have a resource to be able to get warrants, even in the absence of the officer having seen the conduct. And so the officer, either day or night, can make a phone call to the on-call prosecutor. That prosecutor then gets a judge on the line and facilitates that whole entire interaction for the application of the search, or excuse me, the arrest warrant. It is, of course, the judge who ultimately issues that arrest warrant, but it is the on-call services which make it possible for that to happen in a seamless manner. Certainly our office, I speak on behalf of Jan Bennett, the elected prosecutor of Brady County. We are honored to be able to provide these services to the City of CUNA, and we appreciate our partnership with the city and with law enforcement in the area. Any questions from the mayor or from the council?
Good. Well, I'd just like to say that we appreciate the service also. It's been a good relationship, and we appreciate that. So.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And also appreciate that the cost didn't go up this year. So.
Yeah. That is a good thing.
Okay, questions?
Nope.
No.
Great.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
CUNA Police Budget Update, Chief John McDaniel.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, John McDaniel, CUNA Police Chief. I wanted to start with just a quick positive note here. We anyway, just wanted to share. We've been inundated with awesome community members supporting. You know, right now there's a little bit of a challenge across the country with the rule of law and support for law officers and prosecutors, and I, it just warms my heart that we, the picture on the bottom with the thank you banner, I mean, that is a almost a weekly occurrence. We have people just really supporting us right now, and it means a lot to the troops. It really warms their heart, and it just, we're just proud to serve the community. Chris, give my move to the next slide. This is our, this is a live page that you I'm going to send a link to everyone this week that you can look at this at any point. It does update every month to new updated numbers. And when we look at the top one, our call response time, we are down 11 seconds. We're happy that that's going down as our, you know, as we grow. Our goal for across all of our three contracts and the unincorporated Ada County is to have that under 5 minutes. So we're far under that, and we're pleased with those numbers for the most serious Code 3 calls. The next one you'll see is the crimes per 1,000 residents, and that also continues to go down. Despite our population, you know, going up, the overall crime rate is going down. And at the bottom of that, at the bottom, Chris, just right below that. There we go. Thank you. You'll see. So, persons' crimes are, you know, about the same. They did go down a touch. As that, those are the lewd and lascivious, rapes, aggravated assaults, the felonious type of crimes against another person. Those are down. We only had 201 of those this year versus 211 last year. Property crimes are up, but we expect those crimes to go up as our population goes up. And that's more of the burglaries. It seems our construction thefts happen in waves. You know, then we'll get the person caught, they'll get them prosecuted, and they'll go down again for a while. But definitely with all the construction, that is a big part of our property crimes. And then society crimes are the those are mostly drug crimes, misdemeanor and felony, as well as our DUIs. And those crimes are also going down a touch. And that leads me to our the last page here, Chris, if you don't mind, which is our budget. So this is the first year of the four that I've stood before you at budget season that I did not ask for. I really appreciate the cooperation I've got with council and through this growing process. We've been able to add 6.25 deputies in the last 3 years, and I can't be more thankful for that. We are doing, as you can see by our crime numbers and even our response times, I think the community support is there as well. I think we're using discretion in a good way, and I think right now we really are set up for success, and that's because of the support that you've given us the last 3 years, especially when I have asked for two deputies each year. Can't say enough how appreciative we are. We feel like we can do this job safely, not just for the citizens, but for ourselves as well. And I just want to say thank you for that. And as we look at the budget here, you will see it still goes up 57,000. There's a breakdown at the bottom of why that does go up. The county commissioners did approve a 2% COLA. That's the biggest chunk of this. Insurance did go up as well for our 20 employees. As well as our rent was raised. It's been several years since we had an adjustment in our rent, and so that was raised. And you'll see that we are required by the feds to enter the NIBRS crime data, and the numbers of those went up. That went up a little bit, but we did decrease our fuel costs for next year, as well as the shared services credit increased another $4,000 up to a total of, you'll see in the upper, $192,000 is the shared services where the sheriff and BOCC are giving a credit back for, at times we will respond outside the city limits to respond to an emergency. And by the same token, the South County deputies do that for us as well. And so that's just a savings that we have built in there, that 7% for that benefit. And I do stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for you.
John? On shared expenses, is there ever a time that both of our vehicles are out of the city into the county in a shared experience? Or do we always keep one back?
We try to always keep one. There might be a time that it's on, if we end up responding, if we're the closest, because South County units are, let's say they're out east or on the freeway towards the stage stop. And if there's something that's on the Canada line down there towards Melba, if we're the closest units, we're going to, dispatch is automatically going to send the closest units. But what we have a system in place where whoever gets to CUNA first will then take, we make sure that CUNA gets covered as soon as possible. Even Meridian helps.
Okay.
And so we definitely, we're constantly watching where the deputies are going to make sure we have the right coverage and adjusting.
So if we send two vehicles down to Swan Falls, the southern vehicle for the county will stay here in CUNA then?
Yeah, what will usually happen is we'll have two stay in the area for the next call, and we'll still send two down so they can relieve once the emergency is over. They can relieve and take the follow-up investigation that sometimes takes 2 or 3 hours so we can get the CUNA deputies back to CUNA.
Okay, yeah. Okay. That's all I've got, Mayor. Thank you, John.
Okay. Warren, anything? Okay, thank you. And I would assume that our response times are down also because we did add some detectives, so our officers aren't having to do investigations and
absolutely
quite as often. So.
Yeah, the two additional detectives over the last couple of years have really made a huge difference as far as there's a lot more. Mr. Blizzard can attest to the fact that, you know, we are, when it comes time for prosecution, there's a lot more that's required than ever before. And so it takes a lot to prove a case. And so for them to be able to dot all their I's and cross their T's, which is the expectation in America and in our justice system, and we are very appreciative because there was a while there that just trying to keep our head above water, but we definitely feel like we can be successful, and we appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, very good. Thanks, Chief.
Mayor, I wonder, the crime rate has dropped to roughly 4 points. You would think the price would drop 4 points, too, wouldn't you? We're making your job too easy. So.
I was thinking maybe for patrol cars we could maybe go to the Prius.
Yeah.
Or smart cars. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate that. You know, one thing that I did not do is we need to, well, I guess we'll just do that here anyway. So the request is that for the public hearing for Spring Rock, that be tabled until the July 7th.
21st?
July
21st? Yeah.
The July 21st meeting, is that correct, Wendy?
Yes.
Because of a family emergency, so if we could have a motion to that effect.
Mayor, I move we move the public hearing for the Spring Rock development to the July 21st meeting.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And motion carries. Thank you. Budget workshop, Jared Empey, City Treasurer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor and Council. So this is kind of the second installment. Last time we kind of did just a basic look at the general fund summary. So page 1 of 24 of the packet, just as the general fund summary of the last 3 years, essentially, with actual projected for this year and budgeted for fiscal 2021. So as you can see, just a basic snapshot, and the underlying detail is in the supporting documents. But essentially, property tax revenue is expected to increase due to annexations and new construction. We don't plan on taking the 3% increase, which came at a cost of about $96,000. And our other revenue will stay about the same or potentially decrease slightly. And building permit revenue will stay probably about the same as this year will come in. So essentially this year, it's projected to come in a little bit below what we had hoped, but better than it could have been, granted the circumstances. As you can see, public safety, just some modest increases from fiscal 20. Our capital expenditures, essentially that's money that we transfer over to the capital projects fund from the general fund. That's decreasing a little bit from the current year, mainly due to the fact that we're carrying over a lot of projects. And other expenses, so some of those include salaries, wages, maintenance, that sort of thing. So as you can see, we project that we'll be essentially positive for the fiscal 21 year. And fiscal 20, the reason for it coming in a little bit negative was for two reasons. One was carrying over some projects to fiscal 21, and also building permit revenue coming in lower than we had hoped. So those were two of those reasons. And 2021 includes, as I had mentioned last time, a COLA of 1.26. Essentially, that's just inflation-based with the CPI. It takes into account the fact that we didn't take the 3% increase on property taxes. And one thing you could see later on in the year, at year-end, is potentially about $250,000 in money that gets transferred out to the capital projects could get transferred back in. So that's a typical occurrence on a yearly basis. So that's the first fund. I can go fund by fund or just wait till the end if you'd like. If you have any questions now about the general fund, or if you just want me to move on and I can come, we can do questions at the end.
Any questions on the general fund? Okay.
Okay. So the second one, so if you turn to page 10, well, let's actually go to the grant fund, which is page 8, I believe. Yep. 8 of 24 of the budget workshop packet. So essentially, the project that we expect in this year, fiscal 21, is the purchase of the Greenbelt. So that's what that project and that's what that fund entails for fiscal 21. I'd expect quite a bit more activity in the years following, since we're looking at some more downtown revitalization, but fiscal 21, it should just be essentially that one big project. Latecomers fund, this one doesn't really change that much, so you'll see that on page 9 of 24. So this is for reimbursement of oversized lines and also different project reimbursements that may be approved by you. So this is one of our healthiest funds, and I expect it to continue that way as long as we keep rolling along with healthy building activity. Next year, we should have, this year, well, so fiscal 20, we'll see a lot of those payments come in. So we always pay those out in August, and so you'll be seeing those in the 2nd August. I believe the 2nd August council meeting, you'll see all those, which will come out to, I believe it was about 1.3 million is what that comes out to, 1.4 actually. So then next year, there'll be some modest amounts. And then the year after that, we'll have potentially significant ones that we might want to discuss in City Council for reimbursements related to Falcon Crest subdivision. So that is definitely one to keep on your radar, given the dollar amounts are fairly large and some of the payment timelines are maybe shorter on that. So keep that in mind as you wait for that. The payment time period on those, they're looking at 5-year repayment periods on some of their projects, as opposed to normally we do 10-year repayment timelines. So any questions so far on the latecomer or grant fund?
Questions? No.
Okay. All right. So maybe if you could turn to page 10 of your budget workshop packet. So the water fund has been very, very stable over the past several years. As you can see, actual projected and budgeted for the past for 20 and also 19, it looks like it'll be very very healthy. As you can see, the carryover is also very strong in that fund, and the reason for the negative amount in that is due to high amounts of capital expenditures. If you have any questions about that we can bring those up shortly. One of those is a $750,000 piece that is related to Falcon Crest. Essentially, in the development agreement, we had agreed to construct some water capital improvements. And so the first installment of that is $750,000 of about a $2 million project. So that's one element that really boosted that amount. And one thing that also boosted the capital expenditures in the water fund is carrying over a lot of projects from prior years. So we've just had a lot of projects that didn't get completed, and so they're needing to be completed. But as you can see, revenue is very stable. Same with capital, revenue is fairly stable. And expenses, aside from the capital expenditures, are fairly stable as well. But if you'd like to go into those capital expenditures for the water fund, that might be a good item to go to, if you have any questions on those.
Okay, questions on the water fund?
Okay, moving right along. So the next fund, as you'll see on page 13 of your packet, is a sewer summary. And before we go on, I just want to thank the council for helping us out with the rate increase on the sewer fund. It was something that, honestly, probably from week one I had looked at once coming on the job and saw that there was a significant need in that fund for a revenue increase. And I just want to thank you, the council, for doing that. And I think it'll help make that fund a lot more stable and also healthy in the future. So as you can see, revenue is projected to increase significantly due to that sewer fund increase. As you can see, budgeted 21 is about 1.2 million higher than 2019. And a lot of that is due to the rate study that we presented that was approved ultimately by you. So I think that that'll help fill the gap that was created over essentially an 8 to 10 year period. So then, as you can see, capital revenues will essentially stay flat, labor and benefits essentially flat, maintenance and operations. So as the system ages, we're expecting that thing that our maintenance and operations will increase due to essentially some components reaching the end of their life. So that's the reason for the maintenance and operations to increase. And capital expenditures, so let's see. So some of those projects that led to the increase in the sewer fund. So you'll see that we have a lot of capacity issues that we're working with. We had a presentation that Public Works put on, I want to say it was a week or two ago, in which Paul and his staff discussed different capacity issues and issues that we could have in the future due to lift stations being overburdened or different segments of town essentially being at capacity. And so many of these projects that we're proposing are to alleviate some of those problems, different studies that we're proposing to essentially get to the bottom of how we can fix a lot of those capacity issues, because without them, we may have to stop building in certain areas, or if it got bad enough, potentially moratorium on building until we could alleviate those capacity issues. And so some of those projects are such as rehabilitation of Danskin lift stations, a big one, 10-mile lift station for $500,000 is one budgeted item. Let's see. I'm trying to think of another item. Looks like I got page got cut off on the capital projects end. But another item is Hubbard Lift Station, $35,000. Lagoons, redoing liners, basically adding capacity out at the lagoons. The facility out on Swan Falls. So essentially a lot of capital expenditures in that fund. And it's mainly to make it so that we don't have to tell builders, no, you can't build. So I think it's important that we get ahead of a lot of those issues that could become big problems in the future. So any questions on the sewer fund?
Question for Jared. Okay.
All right. And then kind of the last fund that is one of our major funds is the irrigation fund. So as you see on page 16 of your packet. So this fund is one fund that is very stable, and I expect it to also be pretty stable in next year. One item that with the capital expenditure item that you see a substantial increase from 652,000, well, it was 116 up to 652. There are several ponds that like Ashton Pump and Pond for 400,000, and I believe that there was another, let's see, I believe it was as part of downtown revitalization, that was another 100,000. So a few big projects that'll go into the irrigation fund to make sure that different ponds are staying up to par, and also potentially converting old gravity systems that sometimes are a problem in the downtown area to pressurized irrigation. So those are some of the big projects we have going on in the irrigation fund. However, I don't expect as much activity as in this fund as I do the sewer fund and the water fund for the next year. So any questions on that?
Question?
Not on that, but I have a question if we rewind all the way back to the front.
Sure.
How is the 1.26% COLA increase figured? Because I noticed on the police one, it's 2%, but ours is at 1.26, I think was the number.
So, Councilmember McPherson, I can't speak for Ada County and how they develop their figures. However, our figure of 1.26 was purely inflation-based. So essentially, you can go out and look at figures that the government compiles of inflation data and averages.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is called the CPI, so Consumer Product Index. And as compared from May of this year, of May to last year, that increase was 1.26%. So, and last year, I can't remember what our COLA was last year, but that's how I've figured it the last couple of years. And okay. That's how John Marsh also figured okay. it when he did it. So, but for any specific questions about how Ada County figures their COLA, you'd have to direct that towards Ada County.
Based off Boise numbers.
Call the sheriff. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll call him. Listen, John told me to call you. Thanks, John.
You have COLA light in the oven. You have COLA light in the oven.
Made with real sugar.
Okay, so the next fund, if you don't have any questions on that, was our
parking deck.
Let's see, if we could go to page 19. So this is our solid waste fund. Again, I just want to cover everything. So we've covered the main funds, the general fund, water, sewer, and irrigation funds. These are some minor funds that we have, the solid waste revenue. So if you're not aware of how we do it currently, so basically we serve as a middleman for J&M. So we receive about a 10%, we call it a royalty fee for billing for them, and then we keep the 10% and we pay them on a weekly basis, their portion. And so essentially this fund is a break-even fund. We're not expecting to make significant money off this one, where you will see our portion is actually in the general fund. So this one is not a significant fund in, as a revenue generator. Then our capital projects fund on page 20 of your packet. So the capital projects fund, these are monies that are transferred over from the general fund to essentially fund government-related projects. So a lot of these will be parks-related. Sometimes they'll be vehicles that are strictly used by general fund-related activities. So in our list of projects, you'll see things like sinking fund for park restrooms. You'll see building out of certain parks that aren't covered by park impact fees. You'd have to direct questions to Bobby as to why they may or may not be covered by park impact fees. But also some of those projects are like grant fund. So in purchasing the green belt portion, we essentially receive half, we have to pay half the money, and the grant covers the other half, which is $183,000 of our portion, and $183,000, which will be covered in the grant fund. And then, yeah, so essentially a lot of it is parks related, and also some are like retail incubator, which was a project that we're using as an economic development project, and also just some other minor projects. But essentially, as you look through anything in capital projects, most of it is parks. So one of the largest project that you'll see, aside from the Greenbelt, is a refresh of Bernie Fisher Park and playground equipment. So as part of this project, it's $450,000 that is essentially to revitalize or to give a whole new refresh to a lot of the playground equipment at Bernie Fisher. If you have any if you have any specific questions on that, you'll want to direct those towards Bobby, but that's what makes up the majority of these projects. Do you have any questions about the Capital Projects Fund or any of those projects that you may see on the following page? It'd be page 21.
Okay. Any questions?
Mm-mm. Not yet.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Again, one thing we tried to do was to make every fund break even. And so we tried really hard, and sometimes the reason is that sometimes we have projects that carry over. And so if you have any questions that come up, just let me know. And then, so the next fund is our Park Impact Fee Fund. This is also a fairly healthy fund that we use to construct parks that we have to build out due to additional building activity. So as you can see, we have about, at the end of this year, we'll have about 1.6 million as a carryover. And so that fund looks pretty healthy. So we should be able to put together some nice products. I believe that the Zamzo Park can be partly funded at least by that, so that'll be one item that we'll be seeing come through.
Just a question, Mr. Mayor, with your permission.
Yeah. No,
just on the Park Impact Fee Fund, as I understand the law, and I've done a lot of impact fee work here in the last couple of years, the only reason this would be in the budget is that it would be shown as an income item for expenditure for a park project. It's not, the whole fund will not be in your budget because it's not part of the city's money. It's a trust fund. Is that the way I understand this works? I assume that's what we're doing. And in regards to what that funds, that's driven by the capital improvement plan for that, for the park impact fee. And that capital improvement plan identifies what facilities are eligible for expenditures out of that fund. And this police impact fee will work the same way when that builds up and the chief recommends some expenditures for a capital improvement in that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
All right. So the next project, the next fund that we have is the police impact fee fund on page 23. As you can see, we've accumulated, estimated at the end of this fiscal year, about $70,000. So it continues to accumulate, and we'll hopefully it continues to do so that we can put that money to use. But at only $90 a building permit, it's not.
It'll take a while.
It might take a while, yes. And then the last one is our urban renewal district. This one's just information only, so that the council is aware. So essentially, for this fund, it'll be about $96,000 that will be used for essentially formation costs of the urban renewal district. We estimate at the end of this year we'll have about $60,000 remaining of funds that had been approved from prior years. So we anticipated that we'd need an additional $30,000. So the maximum that we'd permit under that would be $96,000. And this will be essentially on a reimbursement basis only. So this would only be sent over to the urban renewal district on a reimbursement. So essentially, let's say we pay JUB, I don't know, $20,000 for helping with the with the formation of the district. Then later we transfer $20,000 over as a grant, as we call it. So that way the costs are covered, and we're able to create the district. So hopefully that was informational. If you have any questions, please let me know. I stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Jared. Bill.
With your permission, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I just want to ask a question maybe of the council. This wouldn't be asking for a vote, but it just I would coordinate with Jared on this. If you intend to reserve the right to take what I understand would be a foregone amount if you don't take your 3% increase in property tax, and we have to draft a resolution where you would reserve that right to take it in a future year. That doesn't commit you to have to take it, but if you don't do that resolution, you forego that route, that right completely. So I would think you would want that opportunity, or at least to consider it. So I would anticipate that I would prepare one of those for Jared to look at for when we actually get into the budget approval process, that you would exercise that option, because we have, that's a new statute this year.
Yeah, right. Okay. Good. So, and one question that's going to come up, if it hasn't to you already, is the so the governor put in a program thing, calling it property tax relief. To basically, what that does is that affects the 3% for emergency services. We contract with the sheriff's department, so Ada County is eligible to take that. And then, as you know, the fire district takes care of fire and medical. So we don't really qualify for that, but we can still provide that same property tax relief by simply not taking the 3% here. So I think that's a good option. Jared and I talked about it at length, and I think that we're in good shape this year to be able to do that and not impact the taxpayers this year. So that's kind of how we came to that, leaving the 3% out. But if the community's asking you about the property tax relief from the governor's office, technically, we don't qualify for that, but we're providing that same relief by not taking the 3%.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much, Jared. Appreciate that. Jared.
Mayor?
Yeah.
If we don't qualify for the grants, but the sheriff's office qualifies, are those grants going to be included in our budget this year, prorated to the city of Kenner? John?
For the record, John McDaniel, Kenner Police Chief. Councilman Cardoza, Mr. Mayor, we are still looking into that on our side. We're asking, we're looking at how that is going to play out. Because, and Jared, I'm not sure if you've got any answers from your side, but I know you know we can't technically qualify on than the city, but we are looking at a way that we can grab those, you know, what the governor did put in place for cities like CUNA, and I hope to have an answer fairly soon. I'm sorry, I don't have one now.
It just seems unfair that you're qualifying because we're not taking it, and then the sheriff keeps it for the
And we have had some discussions on that. There's still some parameters that need to be worked out on that, so we don't know exactly how that works. That's why we don't really have it in the budget yet. And okay. As we all know, some of these federal dollars cost more money than they're worth before you take them. So I'm not sure exactly how that's all going to play out. But Bill, did you have something you wanted to?
Mr. Mayor and Councilman Cardozo, with your permission, Mr. Mayor, my hunch is that we're talking about two separate government entities. You're talking about the county, which is eligible, and cities are eligible. And what the mayor is saying is that the way that grant works is that if you provide that service, if you provide police service, if you provide fire service, and it's your department, then you are eligible for some of that, but you have to agree to not take a foregone amount if you take the grant. My hunch is in this situation is the county may be eligible because it has police. The fire district is not a city or a county, so it's not going to benefit. Is the way at least that's what it looks like at this point. And so the county, if it would just offset its 3% increase by taking that grant. But the only way this city would benefit from that would be the negotiated contract with the county for the service that is provided by the county, since it's not your department. Now, if you can argue, based on the contract of the service, that we really do have a department and that somehow qualifies, even though it's a service agreement and they're not our employees, then you might be able to access part of that. I just don't know what the regulations are in that regard. It sounds like the mayor's looked into that thus far.
So the issue with us is we contract with the county.
Right.
And what this for is for payroll for emergency services. Although we provide the funding for that, we don't actually
have
the payroll. So that's what leaves us out. So we're still having discussions to see if there's a way to partner or not, or how that's going to play out. But there's still some things that that we don't know exactly. So we know that we don't qualify on our own for it. So
I know the sheriff, you know, is dealing with the BOCC on that exact question, how to handle this one, because it puts us in the new relief puts us in a unique situation that we haven't been in before.
It's Which another one of those benefits that get really complicated, and we still don't. We've tried to have districts added in it because it was for cities and counties, so we've tried to have districts added to that, and I don't think that we got that done. So
I'm not aware that's been accomplished, Mr. Mayor, with your permission. The other thing that I think is problematic about this, it was a quick proposal. It's national. And the way fire is provided and police protection throughout the country is not all the same. And so it's kind of like coming out with one shoe with one size, and it doesn't fit everybody exactly. So there's some play out. And I think that Jared's doing the right thing, as you plan on not having it at this point, because that's the only knowledge you have. We can always adjust a budget later in the year, but, of course, the amount of property tax you take, you will declare that when you approve the budget.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Wow, that was a hard question, Richard. Thank you. let's see. Oh, 4C1.
Oh, yeah.
Richard, you may have the floor on the question on that.
My question is on that resolution on page 1 of 3, 4C1, 6.19.1, or actually 6.19.2, it says any cell phone use while driving is a violation of the law and is strictly prohibited. Then we go down to 6.19.4, and it seems like we're saying if it's unavoidable, which I don't know why it wouldn't be unavoidable, but anyway, it says you'd be able to use hand-free, which seems to contradict the cell phone, any phone use while driving. So one seems to contradict the other when I read that.
I'm not sure on this. I know there was discussions when we've been talking about the cell phone ordinance over the past couple of years about the need to have something in there in the event of an emergency if someone needs to be communicating to police or fire or whatever when they're... Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Richard, I see what you're saying. So perhaps if the resolution read on 6.19.2, any non-hands-free or basically, I think the intent is when we worked on this was that you're not to use any hands-on cell phone use. And that's what 6.19.2 says. But it could be clear if that would be helpful to say, to amend it to say any hands-on cell phone use while driving. And then that is where 6.19.4 then would explain if it's an emergency, if it's unavoidable and you cannot pull over because it's not free, then you could use a hands-free option. Would that...
Where I see a problem is all the way down to 6.19.5, where employees will have to pay for any liability or fine. They're going to go back and say, well, this was unavoidable. You know, who decides what's unavoidable, what is? And then it's very explicit in 6.19.2. Any cell phone use while driving is a violation of the law. So one's kind of ambiguous to the other, to me, anyway.
I see what you're saying.
I think, Bill.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, a couple of points. One, this is not an ordinance. It's a resolution, and it's just your personnel policy. It doesn't impose an ordinance on the public in general within the boundaries of the city. Secondly, if there's anything in there about a violation of this policy that a personnel would all of a sudden buy the liability that would result from any kind of an accident as a result of that, I think gets a little beyond the tort claim law and it'd make me worry a little bit about our insurance coverage with regards to the fact that if someone is conducting business on behalf of the city and they end up in an accident where there's liability, we certainly would want to tender the defense to our insurance carrier, and we'd also would not want to provide some kind of claim on the behalf of the other, the injured party, claiming that somehow this is outside the scope and course of their employment and it might impose liability. I think there's some issues associated with that that I'd want to be a little careful with if that's in there. Which might ought to be looked at for some clarification. Certainly, I think that the idea of this for personnel and having a policy that you're going to not be texting while driving is a great idea, but I think we ought to make sure that we're keeping this as a personnel policy and that its applications really apply to someone, you know, whether there would be any suspensions or there would be any employment related sanctions associated with a violation of the policy, but it doesn't get beyond that cocoon into liability to other people and other organizations.
Bill, does it need to be a little more simply stated that we need to follow the state-implied hands-free ordinance of some sort, or do we...
That'd be a simple way to do it, yes.
Maybe, I think maybe the intent's just to make it clear to personnel what that law is, so I'm not sure. Maybe we ought to just pull that for now and do some more rethinking on it.
Nancy, you okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. Because there is actually a state law in place now, so.
Yeah, and if you have stuff, I can tell you, and I used to do personal injury work. I did it defense-wise. I've done it plaintiff-wise. And I'll tell you, one of the first places that you go when you're going on a claim against some entity, whether it's corporate or cities, counties, or whatever, is you're going to go to the policy, and do we have a policy violation? And it's a segue to getting some potential liability and a foot in the door that might not otherwise be there. So
okay.
That was the part that I think the other stuff we can work out. I agree with Chris. You could probably clarify the other with regards to, but that one piece would bother me a little bit.
Okay.
The liability part.
So are you saying on 6.19.5, while driving will be solely responsible for all liabilities?
Absolutely.
Should be taken out?
I would not have that in there.
Okay.
We will rework it and then okay. Have Bill take another quick look at it before we bring it back.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Nancy Stauffer, HR. So the intent was to add the law that has been changed without removing what was previously in there before. Do you agree that basically leave it at safe driving is an absolute priority and any cell phone use is against the law? Leave in 619.1 and 619.2 and pretty much just remove the rest. That we are to follow the law, that is against the law, and totally remove 619.5.
I think it'd still be important to ensure hands-free is mentioned in there, because cell phone use is not against the law. Hands-on cell phones is against the law. So I think leaving 1619.2 in there as is probably takes it a step further than even what the state law says.
So just as hands-free, any non-hands-free, so just rewrite 1619.2.
Yeah, I think let's just look at that and run it by Bill, make sure that okay. We look like we're... I know that, see, the terminology is one thing that can really throw people off. I know that while the legislature was talking about this, and we'd talk about it with the Association of Idaho Cities, people kept talking about hands-free driving, and really not hands-free driving. So, but the terminology makes a lot of difference, and so I think let's just...
Okay.
Put together what you think will work, and then run it by Bill. We'll take a quick look at it, and maybe Chris can help with that.
Okay. All right.
Does that sound good?
That sounds like a great plan. I appreciate Councilman Cardozo calling
too.
This into question, because you can have things in policy, and it's meant in-house. You just don't want to have stuff that's going to all of a sudden provide personal liability to your employees that might otherwise be unnecessary. We usually like to, if we get in those cases and they're defendable and they're under the tort claim law, as long as they're not acting outside the scope and course of their employment, you can provide a defense to them. If you can argue that they're outside of their course and scope of employment and point to policies, then they're named individually. You can't get them out on a motion to dismiss, and they end up potentially having to tender the defense of the action to their own insurance company. Their insurance company says, we're going to decline coverage because you were doing this in your business, and it just creates a mess.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mayor, Chief, do you guys have a standard cell phone use in a police car? I wonder if it's something, Nancy, you might talk to the chief and find out what their procedures are.
John McDaniel, for the record, City Police Chief. Yeah, so as of July 1st, it was changed in the state law to where we are accepted as law enforcement in that because we have mobile data terminals, and sometimes we just have to make calls to victims as we're responding to get further information. So we are accepted, and it does, I think the state law, there was a lot of work that was put into that state law to where they do allow you to pull, you know, you're allowed to touch it for one, to activate your phone, to turn it on. It's very specific in state law, and then also make the one, you can do a one push on it to activate the voice, whether that's, a lot of cars can do it right on the dash, but you're allowed to do it on your phone. So you're allowed to pick it up for that, but you're not allowed to dial a number. It gets really hard for us to enforce, though.
Okay. So you guys are above the law.
You had to go there, didn't you?
I knew that was coming.
I had to go there. I'm sorry, John.
It's a phony exception.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Richard, for that.
Do we need to make a motion then to table 4C1?
I don't think so. We just pulled it off, so I don't think we need to. We pulled it off. It wasn't approved, so we'll just bring it back with instruction.
Okay.
That sound reasonable?
Unless you want to bring it back at a specific time, then a motion to table for
the
time
certain
would be in order.
Okay. Next item is item 8, consideration to approve ordinance number 2020-22. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA making certain findings and enlarging the boundaries of the CUNA Municipal Irrigation System by the inclusion of Ada County Assessors Endurance Holdings LLC and Frank J. Fazio Jr. and declaring water rights appurtenant thereto or pooled for delivery purposes and directing the City Clerk to record this ordinance as provided by law and directing the city engineer to provide the notice of this ordinance to the CUNA, Boise CUNA Irrigation District, the owners, and update the irrigation system map and providing an effective date.
Any questions on that, Richard?
No.
Warren? Okay, then this is just a normal adding of an irrigation system to our current system, so I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2020-22.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance number 20-22. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-22.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2020-22. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. And that is actually all we have on the agenda tonight, except for mayor and council announcements. Is there anything anybody wishes to announce?
They're paving the down street downtown, or what do we call it, the main street downtown. So they had got paved today. So.
Good. Yeah, I know they've had some issues with some of the concrete that was poured and had to be redone, and so there's been a couple of delays. I don't know exactly how far out we are on being behind on the project, but I think they felt like they'd be able to get things turned around and get back to a normal timeline. So should be in good shape. I think everything else is going pretty well. I was listening to the Central District Health Board meeting this afternoon. They didn't get to the vote or the motions even before I had to come in here, but I believe by what the discussion was that they had so they negated their order from July or June 22nd for closing the bars and that because they didn't have a proper public hearing notification for that to happen. But it sounded like they were going to go right back into it. Like I said, I didn't hear the motion yet, but the only change they were going to make to that same order, I believe, was gatherings of 50 people or more should be avoided, and they were going to change that to shall be avoided to make it more of an order. And then they were looking at directing the director to come back with a recommendation depending on number of cases and how that works for their July 14th meeting that would require mandatory mask wearing. So that's Central District Health, and it sounds like they're going to monitor things here for a while before they step up with that next order. But cases are starting to drop slightly, so hopefully we can continue on that downward trend, and hopefully we don't have to back up any more steps. So, yes, Bill.
Just information. I think I saw from ITD that they're going to start asking for public input on various highway projects and various priorities. And I saw in there, I think, the corner where the state highway bends and comes into CUNA is on that list. And I would assume the city and city people will want to be involved with comment on that, because that'll directly affect this community. And I think, aren't they also looking at some improvements through Meridian to widen it to three lanes going each way, so the, to improve access coming out this way and congestion at that end?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think that it's going to be a pretty popular thing that they add the right turn lanes at all the intersection also, because I know there's a lot of people that pass in the emergency lanes and that, so... Chris actually posted that out, and I think maybe Wendy did on our city sites and that, so that we could get comment. But we need to work with Lisa on that and see what she's got going, and especially where that curve is concerned. And, but, yeah, that's a very good recommendation. Okay. Anything further? Well, meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.